Welcome back to the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Troyer.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
And we are here having a bit of an Inception moment because we're going to be podcasting about podcasting. And when you podcast about podcasting, you have to bring podcasters. With us this week, we have the two people behind Cloudcast.net. So with no further introduction, Aaron Delp, Brian Gracely, say hello to the people.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You guys are the real pros here, and we brought you here today to ask some questions. We get asked a lot, how do you start a podcast? What are some of the tips and tricks? So everything from the basic, how to get started, to the technical aspects. So how about we dive right in? What made you start the cloudcast.net?
Well, Amy, I feel like we should be a little bit more honest up front. Guys, we have no idea what we're doing, and this is really an intervention with the Geek Whispers.
Aaron, this is the part where we whisper.
But we don't either. We've just been doing it longer.
So this is Brian. Let me jump in and put this into context for you guys. So probably 2.5 years ago, I think it was or so. Aaron and I were literally like we didn't know each other terribly well. Our wives knew each other a little bit through some social stuff, and we knew each other a little bit through work, but not really. I was at NetApp. He was a VAR for NetApp, and then I was at Cisco, and he was at VCE. And one day we were sitting around doing something, having beers or watching our kids do gymnastics or whatever it was, and literally we were kind of going, do you like your job very much? And it was like, no, I'm kind of bored. And we were watching all this crazy stuff happen in our industry that was going really, really fast. And we were always kind of saying, like, how do we learn this stuff? And you know, I think that was what sort of connected us. We were both kind of technically curious. And so one day we were, I don't know what it was, and we said, hey, we should do a podcast. And here's going to be our selling pitch. It's going to be awesome. Our selling pitch is we're going to call up people, probably from Twitter or from wherever, and our pitch is going to be, hey, we're two guys. We have zero followers. You've never, ever heard us before. Can we have an hour of your time? We think what you do sounds interesting. And that was literally our first pitch. I think we made it to Christian Riley, who at the time was doing a bunch of very cool sort of private cloud stuff for a company called Bechtel, which builds bridges and roads and stuff like that. And for some reason, he said yes. And we were like, oh, shit. We got to figure out what
to
do.
Now we have to do something.
And then we had to figure out fun things like how do we record this stuff. And we were lucky. We did another total cold call, and we called Greg Nierman, who everybody knows now runs a new podcast every 6 months. And he was very cool to us, and he said, hey, not only will I explain to you guys what I do behind the scenes, which was this long, convoluted process, but you guys can come on and be a guest, and you can learn kind of my process. And we were like, oh, okay, cool. And it kind of all spawned out of there, and it's been – you know, we joke all the time. Like, it's literally been 2.5 years of just kind of learning all the time and tweaking stuff and trying to stay motivated. But it all spawned out of basically we were bored with our jobs. We were both kind of curious, and we were too dumb to not know what we didn't know.
Well, let's step up for a second. Where are you guys now, 2.5 years later? If people haven't listened to the cloudcast.net, what do you guys cover? How many episodes have you done? I mean, what?
So I'll take that. This is Aaron. So we are almost 90 shows in at this point. And plus, we've spun off actually another entire podcast off of it. There is actually another podcast in our feed called The Mobile Cast. So that is really around mobile computing and is run by, was a regular guest, Brian Katz. And then Brian and I, we do the Cloudcast, obviously. And what we're looking to do is we tend to invite a lot of smart people. And we actually modeled it after kind of to your credit, John, you know, after hours at VMworld in a bar kind of thing, like where you just kind of get somebody's time and you want to pick their brain a little bit. You have very casual conversations. We do tend to kind of pick a topic and go somewhat deep technically, but every show, we've got some news ones here and there that we kind of throw in sometimes. But for the most part, is a guest, somebody much smarter than us that knows a specific topic much better than us. And we just want to learn. And it was really, like Brian said, more of a networking tool to kind of get started. We weren't necessarily looking to make money off this. As a matter of fact, I don't know that we've ever made any money off of it to this day.
Not at all.
No. We don't have a lot of overhead, but we haven't made a lot of money either. we're different from, say, like Greg Nierman's podcast, but where it's more like tech news or things that are going on. It's much more current events kind of driven. Ours are very much just topical from week to week, whatever's kind of going on.
Well, what I like, though, too, is that you cross the chasm from infrastructure over to programming topics, private cloud, public cloud. You're a little bit agnostic. Sometimes you're talking about tools, technology. So it is a pretty broad net you're casting.
Yeah. And when you dig into DevOps, you really make sense of something that's quite cutting edge. And you go to a level that's really approachable while also being deep. As somebody who's not in the tech daily, I appreciate the show quite a bit.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'm going to pull back one tick further, because as I think about this podcast to tell people about how to podcast, and if I had heard all of that, I might be intimidated. So how we started, John and Matthew both have experience as podcasters, and you're saying that you're both technical, Aaron and Brian, and you leaned on Greg, who's got his podcast currently Speaking in Tech. What about other listeners who feel like they are not as technical, or this is too scary? Can you talk to us a little bit about your process, your how to sort of demystify it a little bit?
Sure. And the probably the biggest thing I'd say is where we started versus where we are now. And we can go into that in a second. But one of the biggest things I would say is, and it's almost cliche, but just get started. And so what we actually did is, as far as tools, we both use Macs, and we use Audio Hijack to actually record over Skype. So we would get somebody, a guest. We would just have a three-way, four-way Skype call, kind of like we're doing now with Audio Hijack recording that. It kicks out an MP3 file, and then we would do some editing. And that's where we had our kind of first big hurdle of, how the heck do you edit this? And then, at first how do you add music? How do you chop things out? And that was a very steep learning curve for us, and played with a lot of different tools over time. And we had this process that, for every hour of podcasting audio, it was like 4 or 5 hours of editing. And I think Greg Nierman still does that to this day. He does a very editing heavy podcast. But we kind of took a page out of John's book, coming from the VMware Communities podcast, because in addition to Greg, we talked to David Davis over at VSoup. We talked to John Troyer, and we kind of reached out to all these people. And John's number one thing was, keep it really simple, guys, and just kind of hit record and hit publish. Do as little editing as possible. And we realized very quickly that we were doing way too much editing, and it was slowing us down. So we streamlined our editing over time.
I got to say, that's the hardest part about this particular podcast is that we do try to make ourselves sound a little bit smarter by cutting out the ums. But
that for the first 10 episodes, and then we stopped.
I do a live podcast every week, and that actually takes on slightly different characteristics, but I don't do any editing unless I like slander somebody or have like a career limiting, sentence that I say.
Resume generating event.
Exactly. But the whole point is, you leave it live, you keep the freshness. And also, I do it as a small part of my job every week. If I had to edit it and take 3 or 4 hours even and get it ready, I don't even do rehearsals. I don't do pre-meetings with the guests. I don't do anything, which can freak a marketing person out sometimes if they're used to everything being pre-scripted. But if I had to do all that, I couldn't do the rest of my job. So I just turn on the mic and go.
Yeah. We've streamlined it a lot, and Brian's really been key to documenting and streamlining a lot of that, because I've been the guy of like, wanted the audio perfect, and Brian was the one who was like, just get it out the door, damn it. So
yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, if you guys are interested, and we're happy to share this with folks, because really, it's one of the things that we try and do on the show, because we don't take ads. We try and be sort of as unbiased as we possibly can. Is we just sort of treat it as a community thing, because people give us some of their time, so we're happy to record it and give it back to the community. We're happy to share with you guys kind of our checklist of stuff that we do. Some people will look at it and go, that's great. And other people will look at it and go, that's either super anal or too much work or whatever. But I mean, we'll share that with you guys. If you're interested, if you want to do something with it, that's perfectly fine with us.
We'll put that in the blog and have that available for listeners.
Yeah. I think the other thing, so there was sort of two phases we went through, I think, that are, and some people will like this, and some people, this is the hard part. When we were first doing it, there were other people that had podcasts out there, and it was a little tricky for us. It becomes that, like, who do I have on the show? Just like if you're like an insurance salesman, and you first go in, like they go, well, go find clients, and your first clients end up being basically like friends and family. And that was, if people were to go back and look at our shows early on, they were all basically people that we worked with, they were worked for partner companies that we worked with, and they were sort of familiar topics, but they were people that we could actually schedule. And then some weird thing happened after, I don't know, 20 or 30 shows, after we got beyond terrible into like halfway mediocre, is we started having people call us or reach out to us. So we had a lot of startups that would reach out to us. And this was that thing that Aaron and I talked about that was really weird for us, because we're both out in North Carolina, and RTP is a reasonably technical place, but it's not Silicon Valley. It's not Boston. It's not Seattle. And we would have these people from Silicon Valley who would reach out to us, and they would go, can we come on your show? And that was one of those moments where it was like, what in the world just happened? How do these people have any idea who we are? We literally thought it was just friends and family and, a couple of hundred people that we knew that we don't even know if they listened to it. We just knew that, iTunes said that somebody was listening to it. So that
somebody had downloaded it. You don't know who listened to it.
Yeah, somebody right, exactly. Somebody downloaded it. We don't even know if they listened to it. Exactly.
Right.
So that's when it got real for you, Brian?
That's when it got real, and unfortunately, I wish I could tell somebody how that happened, but we don't totally know. The only thing I can tell folks is part of the reason I think we became somewhat visible, and again, let's put this in perspective. Like, the number of listeners that we get is probably a tenth of what John gets and a tenth of what Greg Nierman gets, and it's about 1% of what guys like the Packet Pushers get who do networking. Like, we're still pretty small. I'll throw a number out there. We probably do 15,000 listens in a month. And from what everybody else tells me, like, that's still really, really small. But I think the reason anybody has ever heard of us, especially outside of our little circles, is we tend to say, look, our niche is going to go from stuff that we're comfortable with to, we basically said, like, we're just going to do the bleeding edge thing. Like, we don't think anybody else was doing bleeding edge. It was good for us to learn. And we had a lot of shows where Aaron and I would sit there right before we hit the record button, and we'd go, do we have any idea what we're talking about? And it was like, nope. And we literally didn't. And, we'd try and do some research. And especially when we were – because we're both hardware guys and we're both kind of infrastructure guys. And we'd be –
God, the
like
first
said,
platform
Matthew,
as a service podcast we did.
Oh, my God.
With Red Hat, when they were doing OpenShift back when Isaac Roth was still with the company. It was the funniest thing ever. It was the most awkward, uncomfortable podcast. You could tell we didn't know what we were talking about. We were asking dumb questions. You could tell he just wasn't – he was like telling his stuff and giving his spiel, but he was just kind of like, who are you guys?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to break in. I'll tell you one reason it worked, and one factor anyway, is that 99% of anything is just showing up.
Yeah.
And I think I've heard that over and over again in different community, social media, marketing in general, projects, is that people do it for a couple of weeks or people do it for a couple of months or whatever, and they think, okay, I'm going. And, like you said, you took 20 or 30 episodes, weekly episodes, before it kicked in.
Yeah, and you actually brought up another key point, though, and that was actually something, again, we were kind of stumbled over everything and learned a lot of things the hard way, in that we weren't very consistent at first, because we only wanted to have a podcast when it was both Brian and I and our guest, or sometimes more than one guest, and getting all of those schedules to sync up, and half the time they're going to be in California, and we would have the schedules not work out, and scheduling was just such a nightmare to where we would go 3 and 4 weeks without an episode. We just kind of sat down one day and we're like, you know what? We need to just define a time and tell our guests, this is when we record. Can you show up? And if they're really, really good, they might get a pass where we might record another time, but otherwise, that's when we record. And we set up a weekly time slot, and we became very regular, and our numbers just went through the roof at that point. Once we started doing it on a weekly, or sometimes even more than weekly, if there's conferences and other things going on, basis.
It's almost like everything else in life. It's like people tell you the basics and you kind of go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's no different than anything else, in whether it's social media or it's having a work ethic. It's like, show up, try not to suck, do the best you can, learn from your mistakes, keep trying to get a little bit better, and then keep pushing yourself a little bit to get uncomfortable. And you can probably apply that to almost anything, but we could distinctly point to going through every single one of those stages. And we thought we were learning, and then we'd make some mistakes, and And I think part of it was we don't take ourselves terribly seriously. You know, I think if we were doing this for money, it would be different. You know, the other thing for us, and I think this might be part of the reason anybody bothers to listen to us, is even though we work for vendors, and this does get a little bit awkward sometimes, we try and avoid any conflict with that. And that's tricky at times because, you know, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. Like when I worked at Cisco and Aaron worked at VCE, I mean, we kind of subconsciously or indirectly said, like, well, we're not going to have HP on. And not because we had anything against HP, but because we kind of said, well, it probably would be an interesting show, but it's more grief than we want to deal with at work. And so we would pick something else. But, you know, we've also had people on that would go, don't you guys work for, you know, one of the other companies or a competitor? And we'd go, yeah, but that's independent of what we do. And we're not here to, you know, kind of troll you or make this look bad. Like we're here to kind of educate the community. And they would go, okay, that's cool. And as long as you're pretty straightforward with people about that and people kind of can feel like it's not more marketing, it's not more commercials. Like we're very, very clear to people that call us and say, can we be on the show? We go, yeah, as long as you don't make it into a commercial and we will cut you off and we will not do it. And they're all fine. They seem, you know, for the most part, they're pretty good about that.
Have you ever had to cut somebody off? You don't have to give names.
No, we've had a few where one of the nice things about doing calls via Skype is you don't always have to look somebody in the eye. So we've probably had not a lot.
It's true. I mean,
we've had two or three where somebody would ping us, their CEO would come on, and CEOs are just conditioned to pitch. I mean, that's what they do. They're always selling. And, you know, so there's been plenty of times when Aaron and I would ping each other on Skype on IM and go, we got to turn this thing. Like we got to get it going in a different direction because it is becoming a commercial and nothing that's been bad. I mean, we've never really killed an episode off.
Admittedly though, this is maybe a podcasting trick. We have buried a few in the fact that what you can do is, and you kind of need a couple in the pipeline to do this, is we'll publish one, but then we'll publish another one within like 24 hours because a lot of times iTunes will only download the latest one. So if you publish two back to back, that first one you publish, you could almost bury it in a way.
We can leave the online detectives to figure that out. I'm actually also intrigued by the comment you made about HP, which kind of brings up whole branding and work versus side project sorts of things. I mean, do you think that was the right call at that point? Would you do it again? I mean, you're working for different companies now. So, and how do your current companies see you?
That's a great question. So I'll start off and just say, would I do it again? Yes, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, podcasting doesn't pay my mortgage. And so where I was at the time, either with the original reseller I was working for or for VCE, yeah, it's one of those, you know, coworkers listen to them, you know, some of the execs would know about it. And if you did one that was particularly controversial, there was a good chance that no matter what the social media policies were and what was going on, that there was a good chance I was going to catch flack for it. So I didn't. But then to give you a for instance, though, the position I'm in now, that conversation was had very openly because I came into the position new and the podcast was an existing thing. I spoke to them and said very frankly about it. You know, I could very much, you know, do something that is controversial, maybe competitor based, and is that something they are going to be okay with? And they assured me that yes, absolutely, because this is just kind of part of, you know, getting Aaron and the package at this point. So while I'm not going to turn my podcast into a competitor podcast overnight by any means, but if, you know, we do an occasional episode on it, that's just seen as that's the way it is at this point.
Yeah, that's a really good and strong point, Aaron, especially with how much we've been talking about the personal versus the professional branding and individuals coming up against their corporate or vendor brand. It's important to both be sensitive to that, but also not let it rule the direction you go in. I like how you did that. And it's understandable that evolves with you as, you know, you go from being the zero follower people that you started as to the fame-ish cloud people that you and Brian are today.
Well, yeah, and to kind of take it one step further, like to give you, for instance, I was at in particular, the AWS Summit out in San Francisco recently. And, you know, kind of like, again, one, something that probably started at VMworld, I have had a bunch of stickers printed, and I always put a Cloudcast sticker on my name tag, and I, you know, have them with me in my bag. And so I put one on and walked around, and I when I was walking around to the booths and the kind of the vendor pavilion, I had a number of people go, oh, the Cloudcast, I listen to that. That's a great show. You know, do you listen to it too? I'm like, well, it's me. And they're like, oh, you're Aaron. Like, you could see the light bulb kind of go off, right? And that's when, yeah, at this point, especially in certain circles, the Cloudcast brand is certainly probably bigger than Brian and I at this point.
Which is interesting, because that is one of the things we get pinged with all the time, of people being concerned that their personal brand is overshadowing the corporate brand, if you will. And it's very interesting that it's almost a positive, it sounds like, in this case, where your personalities, it's I don't know. I won't even try to fully answer that question of which one's winning, because my next question was my next question is about amplification and some of your tips and tricks around how you get the word out. So logic would say that each of your personal brands is so strong with, you know, Brian's internet fame and Aaron, your natural charisma, like that your personal brands would get the word out further. But have you found talk to us a little about that, the process?
Well, and actually, so I'll talk about that in 1 second. But one kind of final thing about that is, actually, this, you know, it being bigger than Brian and I is actually kind of a goal, actually, of all of this. Because, you know, for instance, Amy, when you helped us with guest hosting a couple times, and we very much have tried to pitch multiple times. And actually, the MobileCast spinoff was just one thing we were thinking about. We're thinking about taking the podcast in two or three different ways to have actually a long-term goal of this is, how do you scale this beyond Brian and I? And again, make it more community-based. And what we actually want to have potentially long-term is really more of – it's a Cloudcast community of podcasters and guest hosts and things like – you know, like, it doesn't have to be necessarily Brian and I.
Which I should, full disclosure here, Aaron and Brian have been kind enough in the past to let me snag the mic and be a guest host. And one of the things I was very intrigued about, one of the reasons we wanted to invite him onto the Geek Whisperers, was your process, which is probably a little invisible to you because you both have done it for these 2 years. But your show notes are pretty fantastic. So there's a bit of a formula, like in all things. There's a number of questions, and if you're a guest host, they will help you. They'll provide you with this series of show notes. So it is almost like a podcast in a box. If you know how to work a Yeti or another recording device, you can get guests and you can record and submit the file, and they kind of do the rest. So for anybody listening, if you're interested in that kind of concept, I don't know if that's in your how-to document, but I think it's a great best practice that you have of very, you know, you have a script that you can read top and bottom, and then a series of questions in between. And I actually found, back to an earlier point, when you talk about putting guests at ease and making sure it's not a gotcha situation, both times it helped a lot for me to engage them and tell them what was written down in front of me so that they knew there was a little bit of a roadmap going in. So anyway, it's a great best practice, I think.
Yeah, and I would actually say, you know, a lot of that is, you know, I was very much the proponent of kind of the cookie cutter model, but Brian was very much developed a lot of the process and streamlined everything to make it as quick as possible. And, you know, these days, I'll let you go into it more, Brian, but how long does it take us to, you know, from the time we stop recording to kick out a podcast? It's what, 30 minutes maybe?
Yeah, probably 30 minutes. You know, you asked early on, like, kind of what was the process, because you people were looking for best practices. Let me go back to that if you don't mind, just because sometimes it helps a little bit. So the hardest part of the show is still always, and it probably should be this way, like, it's always finding good guests, like, find interesting topics, right? So, you know, that takes us anywhere from, you know, one Twitter DM to somebody to, it could take us 6 weeks, it could take us 8 weeks. And, you know, we kind of build a little bit of a pipeline, and we're lucky that we don't have to do this show more than once a week, because I don't know how we'd find anybody. But so we find a guest. We do a little bit of homework and research, and it's good for us because it kind of forces us to go learn it. It forces us to kind of go figure out some trends. We make some notes. And we've always told people the show isn't really scripted in the sense of, like, you know, we're not reading things for script. We tend to read – we use the notes partially to kind of collect our thoughts. And partially it helps us because we've had a lot of guests where, you know, the conversation just gets really good and really fantastic and it'll start going really deep. And all of a sudden we'll realize like, uh-oh, it's been like 40 minutes and nobody listens. Like this part, this is one of the things we do know, like nobody listens more than about 30 or 35 minutes because it's basically the amount of time that somebody runs on the treadmill, has a commute to work, you know, is on the train. But you get past about 30 or 35 minutes and they basically, they stop because they're where they are. So it helps us kind of fit into a time slot that we found is reasonably good. We do the show, we record it via Skype, just like you guys do. You know, we can kind of tell you the tools, but basically it's just a basic recording tool. And then, you know, we've gotten to the point where it's like, cut off the ends, put some music on the front and the back. We use this really nice tool that uploads it and syndicates us. It's called Buzzsprout. It syndicates it out to iTunes. It has an RSS feed, so it syndicates it to a couple of other websites that have asked us over time if they can syndicate our content. And then we use those show notes as the notes that go on the blog or the website. And it's become this very much kind of very cookie cutter, cut and paste, do a couple of edits, get it out the door. And then we actually have we've got a little bit of a process that's evolved over time. It'd be nice if we could automate it, but neither one of us are smart enough to do that. Where it's like, it goes on Google Plus, and I know that sounds terrible, but we use Google's rankings. It goes on Google Plus, it goes on Facebook, it goes on Twitter, it goes on LinkedIn, it goes on a LinkedIn group, it goes out on our Twitter feed, our personal Twitter feed. So it's about five or six different sort of syndication places, plus a couple of websites that have pinged us. But that's it. It's not like we don't have a service that we use to syndicate, and it does okay. It is a little bit intensive. It would be nice if it was streamlined or something. But like Aaron said, it's probably for us to do a 35, 40-minute show, it probably takes us 2 hours, soup to nuts from, you know, kind of, you know, learning ourselves, which is fun, all the way to editing it and publishing it. And then we're kind of done. And we move on to the next week.
I just want to call that back to everybody's attention. I think one of the very cool things in the idea of community-based learning is you do learn an awful lot when you're forced to go through that process. You're forced to think in a different way, ask questions, engage, listen carefully. I think that's interesting. You said it before about being technically curious, but people thinking about either listening to more podcasts or creating their own, I just think that's a great angle. It's not just this blatant angle of self-promotion that I know sometimes, again, when we get back to that personal brand versus corporate brand identity and what you do with your spare time, it's a form of learning. So very cool to highlight that.
Yeah. And I think it's like anything else that's sort of a, you know, you find that fine line between it being a passion and a job. People take jobs for different reasons. You know, typically if they don't really like what they're doing, they'll hit a point where they don't like the job anymore. I mean, we've had plenty of times when Aaron and I have been like, Is your head still in it? Do you still like what we're doing? And a lot of times that's because we've been traveling a bunch, or we feel like, probably more so, it's like we feel like all the topics have been talked about. If people ever see that we go 2 or 3 weeks, it's because we're kind of burned out. We feel like it's been talked about 10 different ways to Tuesday. And then, you know, we've been very lucky that something will pop up. Somebody will get in touch with us. We'll figure out some angle, and then we kind of get re-energized. But you have to have a little of that drive as well to figure out, like, how do I get past this thing that feels like everybody's talked about it a whole bunch of times and just not be bored yourself? Because that comes across on the show. I mean, if you don't have any energy and you're just going through the motions, you'll hear it. People will hear it. And it's the fastest way to turn people off, because there's only, you know, another 10,000 other podcasts to go listen to.
Well, and one other thing to kind of add, in addition to all the other outlets we mentioned, you know, we both have blogs. And so we've got, you know, the blogs we do on the sides. We have this podcast, and this podcast has turned into all these other outlets through Facebook and LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. But then one thing we've developed that, you know, more specifically, all the credit kind of goes to Brian, because if you go notice, there's not a single one I did out there. But we have the YouTube channel as well. And the videos that are out there, we actually have probably just as many viewers on YouTube as we do as on the podcast. And that is, again, completely separate from everything else that we've done here with the podcast.
The video, so it brings up an interesting thing, and I know John and I talked about this before we recorded, sort of the, should I do a video one? And there's some people that do really, really good video ones. I know, you know, Simon and What do they call it? Simon Seagrave does it, and Dave Davis does it, and I think Eric Siebert does it, and I can't remember the name of it, but they do a really good, basically, video podcast. So that one's very good. You know,
hard to do video, though.
It is very hard. The one thing we've heard from a lot of people about video is it's not as portable, right? So, you know, it fills up your iPod or it fills up your phone or whatever. You know, I'll give you really quick the backstory on the – not as a plug, but we have a video channel. So if you go to youtube.com/thecloudcastnet, you can see a bunch of videos. And the videos actually started – and Amy knows a bunch about this just because she's been involved with some of them – they originally started, and Matt, this is a completely true story, and hopefully nobody at EMC gets really mad at me. I started a job at EMC about a year and a half ago, or last job I had, and I started on December 15th, and everybody from EMC goes home. Like, nobody works those last 2 weeks of the year, and I started, and I felt bad because I was like, well, I got to go into the office because I don't have any vacation days. So I literally would go in the office, and I took a flip camera, and I was just trying to see if I could convince myself that I could explain some things. And so the first, 10 or 15 whiteboards are me just literally filling 2 weeks of time because I was like, well, I don't have anything to do. I don't have any work yet. And it kind of was a challenge for myself to be like, can I explain this in 5 minutes or 10 minutes? Because I'll need it for my job. And I've done
such an incredible practice.
And that's all it was. I mean, that's all it really ever was. I made a list of about 20 of them and I just knocked them all out in 3 or 4 days or 10 days or whatever it was. And I've done that a couple of times now, but that's all it ever is. The best way I always think about it is like, if you ever have and I tell this to people who want to start blogging or want to start getting into this, is I say like, don't do it because somebody told you to do it. But I said, if you have something that you do at work, for example, and you have to explain the same thing more than 3 or 4 times to people, all right, you have to write that long email to somebody, or you have the same hallway conversation, or you have to do something and it's useful stuff, like it's not some intellectual property or some internal secret, that's a great thing to use as a blog. Because now instead of having to repeat it 500 more times, you got it out to 500 people once and you can point to a URL. And the videos were just another extension of that. It was a way of saying like, I give this talk all the time, let's just record it, what the hell. And they turn out okay. They're not high quality. I don't do any editing to them, but they're easy to do, and people seem to like them. I get a lot of people who you've never met before who go, I Googled this word, like software-defined data center, John. I get a lot of people who ask about that thing, and it's like, yeah, I did it. I don't remember doing it, but yeah, I did it 6 months ago, and if you like it, we'll do another one of them. So that's another – it's not really a podcast. We'd always intended to say like, we'll do one that goes along with the podcast, and we never kind of made that happen.
Yeah.
So a couple things here that I've learned to reassure our listeners is I work on a video show as well, and I love that no matter which format you give it to people in, they're going to want the opposite. So I think it's a great word to share with our listeners that if you want to do video, a video add-on, video supplement to an audio podcast, it's a great idea. I run a video podcast, and somebody's teaching me how to strip the audio out because that's the format he wants because it's more portable. So make a choice, stick with it, but don't be surprised if people want other forms, ancillary material, etc. And for our extra material, I'm going to have to share Aaron Delp's social media hierarchy, which was drawn on a napkin.
Oh, so, I forgot about that.
Yes, this is very pertinent to this conversation. So I'm going to leave that teaser out there. So check out the blog. You'll find a JPEG of the famous whiteboarding on a napkin from Aaron Delp as an addendum to this part of the show.
We're dancing around this. I kind of wanted to ask why podcasting in general, it's specifically as opposed to blogs, say. I mean, I do think that we are in a phase here where podcasting is having a resurgence. Yeah, a lot of it due maybe to mobile phones, devices. I mean, podcasting has been around since the first RSS feed, frankly. And it's gone through dips and you know, ebbs and flows. But we now see things like we have Leo Laporte, his Twit network. He made his reportedly, brought in $4 million in revenue last year, which is approaching a nice small business. You've got comedians like Adam Carolla and Adam Curry, with hundreds of thousands of, and Mark Maron with hundreds of thousands of listeners every week that are making a real impact and making a real motion into more mainstream media. Now, when that trickles down, you know, that trickles down to the tech world, that we're not running, you know, millions of subscribers. But I do think that there's something going on with podcasting, and that people are using it as, I don't know, as a supplement to blogs, as a supplement to TV. What do you think your role is in the whole ecosystem as podcasters?
So this is Aaron. I can tell you, for me, because I already had a blog at the time, and so did Brian. The reason why we chose to do a podcast as opposed to blogs is because for us, writing the blogs was, these are my thoughts, and it's almost you're creating the content. For us, the intention of the podcast wasn't that at all. The podcast wasn't look at me and what I think. It was, I want to network with somebody. I want to learn about a topic. And blogging doesn't address that medium in any way, because you weren't going to be able, like, call somebody and say, hey, will you be on my blog? They're like, eh, I already have a blog. And especially some of these, you know, CEOs of some of these startups and some of that, they're very, very busy people. And so to get an hour of some of their times and just be able to chat with them both online and when you're not recording, and you get some very unique insights and a lot of very unique feedback, it was really for us all about reaching out and connecting with other people, at least from my perspective. I think Brian agrees with me there.
I'm a huge Adam Carolla podcast guy. That one and Bill Simmons are probably the two that I listen to the most that aren't technical. I think there's a certain thing, if you look at kind of how the rest of media has evolved and how people have, whether it's tech media or TV media, like we've lost a couple things. One, we don't have a whole lot of really deep, long-form stuff anymore, right? I mean, even stuff like the New York Times has gotten short, and, you know, they worry about having the first article, not the best article anymore. And you've got nothing but reality TV on TV. And people love stuff like Mad Men and Game of Thrones and these things that are very character deep and character rich. And I think people miss getting to know people. Like they're sick of laugh tracks. They're sick of kind of predictable stuff. And I think to a certain extent, if the podcasts are done well, you know, and I think John, you've always done like a really good job about this. You know, what you bring to the VMware community, the technology is interesting, but most of the reason people love the VMware tech community is because they love the people. And you do a really good job of connecting people and showcasing personalities. And I think that's part of it. I think people are – it's easy to do long form. The cost of it's really, really low. You get to know people. You can, like I said, you could listen to it in the car. You can listen to it on when you're having you're going for a run or a walk. Like, it's really mobile, and I think that's part of it. I think people want richness in their life. They want depth at times, and I think, you know, the people that do podcasts well, and I'm not saying we do, but I think the people that at least that I listen to that do podcasts well, that's one of the things I really like about it. And I'm not afraid to, you know, it doesn't bother me to go, I'm going to give them 45 minutes of my time.
That's fair. You can't go too long. There's a podcast network I really like called the 5x5 Network, based out of Austin. And it's just a bunch of geeks talking about, you know, Macs and comic books. And they have different shows, and they're pretty interesting. But they usually run 90 minutes. And I find those a little bit long. If you're really going to take it, like, the 90 minutes is not that bad. And considering what you're up against, which even in the trade press, you know, it's like 300 words on why you should move to cloud. I mean, that's a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah. There's definitely a sweet spot. I'll give you another example. Allison Klein, who she goes by Tech Alley or Tech Allison. She works for Intel. She does one that's about 10 minutes or 12 minutes. It's called Digital Nibbles or Chip Chat or something like that. And it's sponsored by Intel, but it's not Intel biased. She brings on people that will talk about everything from big data to solve the world's water crisis to just, you know, the latest video games. And 10 or 12 minutes is perfect. So I think time is an element of it. We're probably going to run way too long and your listeners will have stopped 25 minutes ago. But, you know, I think a lot of it's content. It's just, are the people interesting? Do they keep your attention? Do they talk about stuff that's going to make you laugh or learn something or whatever? And I think, you know, it's people, and people like to learn about interesting people. Or new people.
It sounds like content is king. What are some of the other tips and tricks you have for amplification, so you feel like you're not just podcasting to your mom?
The one thing that I think we know would work really well that we really don't do very well is we don't do a lot of controversy. If you're really looking for big numbers, train wrecks sell and controversy sells, and but you've got to have a mindset for that stuff. We've always kind of stayed away from it. We've kind of said we're gonna go after what we think is interesting content. Yeah, we'll do buzzwords and that's fine. And we're probably not the right guys to ask in terms of like really, really good distribution, because we have a, like I said, we have a couple of websites that help us. You know, we have however many Twitter followers we have, whatever that number is, and we use a bunch of the, you know, we use a bunch of the public services that everybody else uses. You know, we would be probably much smarter if we took ads, because we probably would get better links that way, or if we, you know, did controversial show. I mean, I'll put it this way, like we'll do shows, for example, like if we talk about networking and in any way we imply anything about Cisco, that show is twice as popular as one that's about generic cloud. If we did one and we called it OpenStack Destroys VMware, you know, John, this is a hypothetical, not that that would really ever happen. like we would probably get five times as many people would listen to it. It doesn't mean the show would be any better.
If your companies, if either one of your employers asked you to host a weekly podcast, would you take that job? And if you did, would the show be as good?
So I'll speak from experience. We were doing the podcast. Aaron and I were doing the Cloudcast. We were probably, I don't know, a year and a half in. And I took a job at EMC and was working with a guy named Simon Seagrave, who a lot of people know, who just had a baby, by the way. Congratulations to him and his wife. And we were sort of saying like, hey, we're going to do an EMC-specific one, right? And we kind of felt like, you know, we talked to some people. We talked to Jeremy Burton, and he gave us the green light and said, yeah, go do it and, you know, go figure out an interesting angle. What we found was it was a little too EMC-centric, and we didn't follow – we tried to follow some of the rules that we did with Cloudcast, just, you know, recording and all that stuff. But we found that, you know, the audience was nowhere near – it didn't grow nearly as fast, and I think we got through about a half dozen episodes or something like that. It was very hard to find topics that you could make not be kind of a really long commercial. So we did it, but it just didn't feel – it felt very forced. It was kind of hard to get passionate about because you weren't learning so much as you were just kind of facilitating. But that was one example. It's not a knock on EMC. It just happened to be what Simon and I were doing at the time. I think there's other companies that do it and do it pretty well, but there's a really fine line between you're just doing commercial and you're doing something that people get value
well,
out of.
I'll tell you that one of the differences, right? You guys are making media, and it's an interesting conversation, and you have to be – the whole shtick is it's even though you have employers, it's kind of semi-independent. What I do, for instance, is not really a podcast in the same way. It's not a media. It's not a media entity, general interest magazine. It is actually a gathering, a weekly gathering around a campfire of the VMware community. So it's the gang gets together. It's live. It's a live event. We get 50 people in a room. You hang out if you have time. There's chat going on in the background. We talk about something. I get a guest. It's about a VMware topic. So you do have to be in the VMware tribe. And then people listen to it. But it's really more about a tribal gathering than a news media opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that differentiation, John. Yeah, well, yeah, and that's what it's about, though. It's about bringing community members together. And when you're doing that just through an audio format that can be distributed as a podcast, I differentiate what John does every Wednesday as something quite different than what all five of us hope to achieve with the podcast that we do respectively.
I treat it very differently, yeah.
A couple thoughts that bring out from the conversation you're having, reasons to have a podcast, because we're about to wrap up here, like you said, so that only our moms and our dogs and cats won't be the only ones listening. Amazing content. But you talked about how you can live somewhere, anywhere, and it connects you to the rest of your industry. And in our case, we happen to work in an industry that has both concentration and distribution. But I think probably a lot of people listening are either in technology or in an industry where that holds true as well, that you can podcast where you are and integrate with a larger community in doing so. So that's an inspirational takeaway.
Oh, absolutely.
What would you say in terms of, and you can do the pro or con, one thing you would tell podcasters, either never do this again or do more of this? Aaron and Brian, let's hear the nugget.
Gosh, okay, so I'll go first. The do more of this is certainly get a good idea of what your show is and what the content will be, like what's in bounds, what's out of bounds, if I use those terms, because Brian and I actually, that's a, you know, many, many beer conversation of, and we would every once in a while kind of reconvene and go, okay, is the podcast still doing what we want it to do? Is it still, and really kind of we have settled on, okay, it's us recreating, you know, a bunch of people sitting around a table talking tech. And that's our thing, right? We're not talking news. We know exactly what our podcast is. And from there, make sure you generate content on a regular basis. That's probably the biggest thing for me personally. As far as don't get too bogged down in the details. Like we were saying earlier, don't spend too much time editing. Don't spend too much time finding the perfect tool and get a process that's good enough. Our process could definitely use some tweaks, but we have it to where it's good enough.
I would probably almost 100% agree with what Aaron said. I think the only tweak I would make is, and I think John sort of highlighted it in what he said, like, I mean, you kind of have to think about a podcast or any sort of media thing or any community thing you're doing is like, how are you ultimately going to make people want to be involved with it? Because if it's just you, then, you know, call your best friend and go have a beer about it. We spend a lot of time thinking about, like, who's going to want to listen to this? Like, how part of it is, like Aaron said, it's marketing and you figure out your niche and you figure out, are you true to that? And I think part of it has been, you know, we keep trying to figure out, are we doing it the right way so that the community can be involved? Do we put it in enough places that people can comment on a blog or they can forward it to a friend or they can call us and be a guest or, you know, make a comment on a video? I think if you do that, you give people that ability to say, this is how I want to get involved. And I think, you know, we probably stole a lot of that from John, having been VMware community people, where we said we can be involved as technical people, we can be involved as bloggers, we can be involved because we go to VMUGs. And we've tried to do sort of something similar in that what we could create. We obviously can't recreate what John did because it's massive. But that's the only other tip I would give. And I think everything else Aaron talked about is right on.
And I would say this too. Kind of ask yourself, is this what I want to do for the next 500 hours or so? Because at this point, we're coming up on episode 100. And, you know, we probably easily, between the two of us, have a couple hundred hours apiece in this podcast over the last couple of years. And we actually still enjoy doing it. And it's probably for us more about that learning and giving back aspect of it. It has nothing to do with how big this is or what our numbers are. And, you know, so make sure you're in it for the right reasons as well.
That's great advice and a very positive note to end on. So where can we find you? Speaking of making it available to the community, Aaron, Brian, where can we look for more Aaron, Brian, and Cloudcast?
Well, we always wrap up our show by basically saying you can find us on thecloudcast.net. On the web, at thecloudcast.net or at thecloudcast.net, at thecloudcast on Twitter.
Oh no, we might have to do an edit. Damn it.
And so, you know, pretty much Twitter and the website, and then the YouTube thing, you can find us there. And if you can't find any of those, just stick our name in Google and it'll probably pop up. We love talking to people. We actually had one group tell us they did all of their product managers got together on Monday and did a fan club thing, which lasted about 3 weeks, I think they told us, which was kind of cool. It stroked our egos. But yeah, we're open to talking to anybody and reach out if anything we said was interesting or you want to be involved with the show in some way.
Well, I know we're all fans here, so thanks for the inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're fans of your show too. Thanks for having us on.
And with that, this is the Geek Whisperers out.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Do we have any idea what we're talking about? It was like, nope. And we literally didn't.